Devoncast from Radio X.
Welcome to Devoncast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us on the Devoncast podcast, taking us on your dog walk or on your commute or wherever you are. We'll be talking politics. We'll be talking big issues. We'll be talking small issues. We'll be talking about the things that affect you. I'm Guy Henderson.
And I'm Ali Stevenson.
And we are being joined today. We have a guest in the studio. We're being joined by Ian Room, Liberal Democrat leader of North Devon District Council. Ian, welcome to Devoncast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. This is the Devoncast from Radio X and the Local Democracy Reporting Service. It's available on the Radio X website. It's available from your usual podcast provider. And it's on the all-new Devoncast Radio. We'll tell you all about that a little bit later on. We've got a packed Devoncast for you as ever after what's been a very newsy couple of weeks in our lovely county. Now, Ian, you're a very busy man, not only leading North Devon District Council, but you have your sights on a seat at Westminster.
Yes.
Whenever the Prime Minister eventually decides to call the general election, and I was sure it was going to be May the 2nd because all the infrastructure was there for all the other elections.
Yeah.
But no, it's not going to happen. But you'll be there trying to put the current Conservative MP for North Devon, Selene Saxby, out of a job. Mm-hmm. When do you reckon it's going to be? What's your best guess?
Well, I think the Conservatives will hang on as long as they can, to be honest. I reckon it'll be October, November. But we can all hope that it will be a lot sooner. Maybe in the summer. It could be that the Conservatives get totally wiped out at the local elections mm-hmm. in May. And they have a rethink, and maybe they might have a leadership challenge. Who knows? I mean, it's just one thing after another with the Conservatives at the moment.
And in Devon, of course, we've got elections. Exeter City Council, a third of Exeter City Council, a third of Plymouth City Council, and the Police and Crime Commissioner. Those are the three.
We're going to be busy, aren't we, Guy?
We are going to be busy. There are going to be counts to go to.
Oh, I love a good count. The middle of the night job.
The night of May the 2nd. You've been to a few election counts in your time here?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I first got elected as a town councillor in Barnstable, actually, in 2003.
That long ago? So, yeah. So you've done your time. Yeah. What I was going to ask you is what it is about these Liberal Democrat council leaders who are standing, because you've got yourself also standing as parliamentary candidates, Paul Arnott, Martin Wrigley and Julian Brazil, who are all current council leaders, and Steve Darling, who is an immediate ex-council leader.
Yeah.
What is it about having that position that puts you in the frame?
Well, I think it's basically that the Liberal Democrats care about the communities that we work in. You know, I'm not saying that other parties don't, but there is a true allegiance and alliance to the communities that we serve, and why I got into the business of wanting to serve the community is because I wanted to see real change and try and make a difference for people living in the community.
Yeah. And I suppose so often that's what draws people to politics, isn't it? But there's one thing about this period before an election that we hate as reporters, Ali, isn't there?
Yes. The lovely purdah.
Purdah is murder. I'm going to get a T-shirt with that.
I like that.
There's a period before the election when it's really difficult to get any council official to say anything that might be construed as being biased in any way. It's called purdah, and it makes our jobs a little bit tricky sometimes.
It does. I mean, it's a 6-week period, and that's quite a long time. And when a council goes quiet for the whole of that period, you're like, what am I going to write about?
Exactly. In theatre terms, the councils go dark for 6 weeks, don't they? You can't get a comment on anything. But there you go. Yeah. Ali, we're starting today with a topic close to Ian's heart, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And it's about Ilfracombe and, you know, the much needed regeneration of Ilfracombe, which is what everybody wants, really, up in North Devon at the moment. This town has a life expectancy 10 years lower in some areas in other parts of Devon, and there's a plethora of things that need addressing, not least because of the lack of investment over many years. In its latest efforts to get financial help for the town, North Devon Council put forward a bespoke bid or an exceptional fund application to the government for £24 million and was feeling optimistic following a visit from Levelling Up Minister Jacob Young in January. However, it heard last week that the bid has been unsuccessful, which came as a major blow to councillors. North Devon councillor Graham Bell explains more.
Partly because of its geography, partly because of a historic lack of investment in certain areas, it's become one of the most deprived areas of of England, really. I mean, it is an area that has historically very much struggled to make ends meet, to put itself together. This bid was put in because we needed something to really rejuvenate and energize the local area. Certainly the effort was put in. There was certainly a very good case was made for this bid to go ahead. And we saw that we had various ministers coming down, looking at our local area. And, you know, there was a strong feeling that there was almost an expectation that people were seeing the strength of our bid, the strength of what we needed, and why we would have used it so well. And, you know, I think it was a massive surprise to everyone that was drawn back. You know, people can have conspiracy theories about whether it's because we're in an election year or whether it's because there are other parts of the country that are simply seen as a higher priority. But realistically, there was no good reason for this bid not to go ahead.
Councillor Graham Bell there expressing his surprise that an appeal to the government to throw Ilfracombe a lifeline has failed. The money would have created more accommodation for key workers, enabled health projects, revamped areas of the town and boosted the private sector rental market, among other things. Councillor Bell says improved public transport and creating employment are also high on the agenda. Here he is again.
A very high number of people are in rented accommodation. That rented accommodation is not always to a standard that we would expect. It's really dragging down the ability of people to move forward with their lives. You've also got, if I get this right, somewhere between 20 and a very high percentage, somewhere between 20 and 30% of people who don't have access to any transport, and you don't have a way when you're in somewhere like Ilfracombe that is so isolated from the rest of the country. You simply, without a vehicle, you're going to struggle to make your basic appointments, hospital appointments, get your essential shopping and things like that. And certainly getting on to work can be a real difficulty. This money would have allowed, you know, 24 million. As a humble nurse, I can barely envisage what £24 million looks like. That's just magic numbers to me. But this money would have allowed us to improve housing stock, to enable people to have a better quality of living, enable more people just to have a bed to sleep in at night. Once you've got that housing sorted out, you're then looking at improved education for people. Improving transport infrastructure would have been an essential part of any moving forward for this area. And really, improving the employment and industry prospects of people living in the area so that they're not forced to find a way to travel onto Barnstable, or, you know, almost an impossibility. Where if you're in Ilfracombe, if you have to work daily in Exeter, I can't imagine how you're doing that in, you know, without a vehicle. Even with a vehicle, it's going to be difficult enough. But yeah, you know, it would have been transformational.
Transformational with 24 million. Ian, I often hear North Devon councillors saying that Ilfracombe is low priority for the government. Why do you think that is?
Well, we have, with the metrics and the statistics are there, really. Well, in relation to Ilfracombe, there appear to be a number of press reports about the failure of levelling up, with councils apparently calling for an inquiry into the whole process of how funds have allocated. Ilfracombe is a great example of how levelling up has failed. It's more levelling down than levelling up. We were put into a low priority area because of the metrics that the government used. The original levelling up prospectus states funding will be targeted towards places in England, Scotland and Wales with the more significant need, yet the metrics chosen didn't recognise deprivation. The metrics instead included, amongst other things, issues such as productivity, skills, commercial and residential vacancy rates and distance to employment centres. Neither did the metrics recognise data at a town level, instead of focusing on a district data level. So Ilfracombe has got left behind. You know, we had two very good bids for levelling up, funding refused. And whilst the government has said that the priority groupings did not represent eligibility criteria nationally, very few bids have been successful from local authorities around the country who have been put into that grouping, such as North Devon.
I mean, it takes an awful lot of work, doesn't it, to put in a levelling up bid. I know you were saying that your officers had worked really hard and everybody was absolutely devastated that bid didn't work. That's a lot of officer time, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, we had the first levelling up minister, who then decided to resign from that position. And then we ended up with the second minister, Jacob Young, who's levelling up minister currently, who came to Ulfracombe. Officers showed him round earlier this year. So we've had two levelling up ministers come to Ulfracombe on the back of a to see what's happening there. We've got Devon County Council, John Hart and myself, who wrote to the levelling up minister personally to ask for extra monies, because there's £24 million we're asking for. We could see results within a year. A lot of these projects that the government are allocating money to won't see the results within a year. We could make a vast difference to people's lives in Ulfracombe. 39% of children in Ulfracombe Central live in poverty. That's the highest rate in Devon, and 26 times higher than the best ranked place in Devon.
Really interesting. When Jacob Young came down, he came to Paignton the day after, and he was driven from Ulfracombe to Paignton, which he remarked on a couple of times. So he's not in any doubt about how big and how rural and how sparse Devon is he? Do you think that maybe the levelling up procedure is slightly weighted against places that do rely on service industries, like tourist towns? I'm thinking of Torbay. I think maybe Ilfracombe's the same, where, you know, where you talk about productivity. We don't have that kind of industry, but
yeah,
service industries don't seem to count as much.
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear on it. Mr. Young came to Devon because of Mr. Jupp wanting his, you know, kicking off his election campaign. So they thought it would be a really good idea to announce the devolution deal.
Did that the next morning,
Next day. So for us to then, for him to come to North Devon, and we showed him some of the houses in multiple occupation, some of the state that the accommodation is in, that residents are having to rent. And our bid was to acquire some of these properties, because we're setting up his own housing company, and we could acquire these properties, and we then would become absolutely fantastic landlords, hopefully, and we could monitor the accommodation, make sure it's in safe, sound condition, and meet all the regulations, and we could have made a vast difference to people's lives by just giving them safe, secure accommodation that is to an high standard and quality.
Interesting that you're setting up your own housing company. There are other examples in Devon where councils have stopped their housing companies. We're thinking Mid-Devon, Torbay as well. Where do you think North Devon can succeed where the others haven't?
Well, I think you have to be more strategic. So every town in Devon that I know of really is struggling for key worker accommodation. So we've got the National Health Service, and we've got teachers, and we've also got industry, you know, people attracting, you know, the best finance directors and people of that skill set. And realistically, there isn't the accommodation. You know, it's you know, councils are having to put people in temporary accommodation. Luckily, in North Devon, we bought our own temporary accommodation. So we can actually house tenants in the temporary accommodation sector without footing the bill from putting loads of people in the private sector, B&Bs and stuff.
It's interesting. I did a bit of a ring round on levelling up just to see what was happening elsewhere. Exeter City Council hasn't made a bid for levelling up money, which is interesting. South Hams and Teignbridge have both got failed bids. Torbay did succeed, but only at the third attempt. With its fish and chips bid, it was for extending the Brixham Fish Quay and some microchip-related building in Paignton. So they called it the fish and chips bid. It was a great idea.
Is that why
idea.
I got it, do you think? Because of the title. I mean, that's quite catchy, isn't it?
It is catchy, but it didn't get it the first two times, though. But I spoke to David Thomas, who's the leader of Torbay Council, you know, just to see what his thoughts are. And he said very much what you just said then as well, that many of the sites that have been supported are sites that were earmarked for regeneration already. So they were kind of shovel ready when the money became available. It wasn't a question of seeing this fabled pot of money and thinking, what can we spend that on?
Yeah,
they already had it there. But I did also speak to Steve Darling, who we've mentioned, and he's pointing out, of course, and I think politicians of all parties are acknowledging this, the massive amount of money that councils have lost since 2010. Steve estimates £800 million that should have come to Torbay hasn't. You'll have a figure in mind as well for North Devon, I imagine.
Well, it's much more than that if you take inflation into consideration. And it is a stupid amount of money. You know, we're having to... You only have to open the newspaper now and every one public sector body is wanting more money. You know, the Devon and Somerset Fire Authority have had to put their precept up, the Police and Crime Commissioner had to put more money. All the councils, majority of councils have had to put their precept up by the highest amount that the government allow. And the cost is costing councils far greater more now than it was.
Yeah.
And the money is less and less. So we're having to, you know, in North Devon, we bought Green Lane Shopping Centre, for example.
Of course,
and
yeah.
it's a good
yeah.
job we did.
Yeah.
It's a good job we did because that's allowed us to get 180,000 profit this year, which then we can spend across the district. So it's not just, because it's based in Barnstable, the benefits of that can be shared amongst the district, really.
Will you spend that in Ilfracombe, Ian?
We'll spend some in Ilfracombe, and we've opened a new play park and everything like that for the seafront, and we've been successful in getting some grant monies for trying to regenerate that seafront part of Ilfracombe. I know we keep mentioning Ilfracombe, but Ilfracombe is a lovely place.
Mm.
You know, it's on the coast.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
And the tourists come, the tourists love it. I like going down there, maybe having my fish and chips and my Ockham's ice cream.
It's an old-fashioned seaside town, isn't it? It's got real charm about it.
It is a beautiful place. But what I don't like is the system that the government have got at the moment. You know, we've been told that there are no recognised funds that we could bid into for this levelling up. We knew that, but where is the recognised fund that is being used to pay £242 million to Canary Wharf, for example?
Yeah.
You know, we can make a big difference in North Devon. You know, one area in central Ilfracombe is with the most deprived 5% of places in all of England, and it's the most deprived place in Devon.
It's crazy, isn't it? And people often don't see that. They look at places, I'm not going to mention Ilfracombe again, but they look at places on the coast, they look at the Tynmouths, the Torbays, they look around the coast, and they don't see that just behind the nice bits, there's some grinding poverty, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's what frustrates me is the old system that the government are using with the allocations of this levelling up money. Mm. You know, it's almost like creating a football league. I know you like talking about Torbay football.
Don't stop me.
and really, it's like that competition. It's bidding councils against councils, and really, it should actually be done on other metrics. You know, such as deprivation and where you're going to get the best buck for your money. And your best buck for your money is we could have showed real results in Ilfracombe with that £24 million. We could have transformed a part of North Devon, which North Devon tends to get left behind the rest of Devon. And, you know, it's up to councillors like us to keep mouthing off, you know, when we're in County Hall and places like that, because everybody's struggling, but let's have a fairer system.
Now, Ali, you and I cover a lot of district councils, and Brad, our colleague, covers the county council. The big topic is devolution.
Yeah.
Obviously, Torbay Council are quite keen on devolution. South Ham's less so. Teignbridge, I think, less so. What's the take from North Devon? What are your feelings that devolution could bring, or are there pitfalls along the way?
Well, The issues that we have really is that, you know, it's better in than out.
Yeah.
For if it's going to happen, we want to be in it. But we've got reservations around the governance structure of it all. You know, the population of Torbay and the population of Devon is a vast, vast difference. And the voting system with the current governance of Torbay and Devon having equal say. I'm just hoping that the scrutinies committees that will be set up to look at the decisions that the cabinets have made makes it fairer for all of Devon, because there are thousands more residents in the Devon part that are not in Torbay. But, you know, I'm hoping strategically that we can look at things like, for example, Ilfracombe, and if we are able to get money from central government, that it's looked at on statistics.
Yeah.
You know, and therefore giving up our portion for other parts of Torbay or for anywhere else in Devon. We've got to be grown up about this and look at us as a region. and look at the statistics and where is the in the end our tax money best spent.
Yeah, indeed. You're listening to Devoncast from Radio X, available on the Radio X website, from your usual podcast provider, and from the all-new Devoncast Radio. All you have to do is ask that little thing in the corner of your room, Alexa or whatever it's called, play Devoncast Radio, and you'll hear this podcast and a number of others produced in conjunction with Radio X in succession on Devoncast Radio. Listen in and see what you can hear. We're joined today by Ian Room, leader of North Devon District Council, and we'll be talking about housing and we'll be talking about football, of course, a little bit later. But first of all, let's turn the clock back a couple of years and talk about COVID. Ali, do you want to talk to us a little bit about the big green building at Exeter?
Yeah, so many listeners may remember getting their COVID jabs in a big green temporary building at Greendale Business Park near Exeter during the pandemic. It was put up under emergency regulations back in 2021 and it was due to be removed by the end of December last year. The company that owns Greendale Business Park asked East Devon District Council if they could keep the building for the NHS and also for business and other uses. Councillors said no back in December, but the company has since applied again to keep it, but this time just for the NHS to use it as a surge centre. Here Councillor Ian Barlow tells us why he thinks the council should let the building stay.
The reason that Greendale was so successful is, if you remember back then, there was a lot of pressure on the National Health Service. We needed something that was going to, basically, at the time, it felt like save us.
But others, including Councillor Eleanor Rylance, disagreed. She said the following.
It is just a warehouse at the end of the day. And there are many warehouses dotted around East Devon, dotted around Exeter. There is a danger of over-focusing on this particular building. It is still outside the built-up area of Greendale. It is still in contravention of various ones of our policies.
Councillors ultimately could not agree whether to allow the building to stay or order it to be pulled down, but they did vote to visit the site before making a decision, so the fate of Greendale Vaccination Centre still hangs in the balance.
Thanks to our colleague Will Goddard for compiling that report on the Greendale Vaccination Centre. COVID, it seems like a lifetime ago now, doesn't it? When everything shut down, I wasn't working here then. I don't know what Radio X did then, but I was trying to remember when I saw that where I went to get my vaccination. I think it was West Point. But did you have big centres up where you were?
I had mine in Plymouth, actually. So, yeah.
I did go to Home Park for one of mine.
Yeah.
Just to carry on the football theme that runs through everything. But the effects on the economy, I remember writing stories around the COVID time where they were talking about the tourist industry having two winters. Mm. Basically, there would be the actual winter when nobody was coming, and then the whole of the rest of the year was just like another winter. Mm. Did it have similar effects up in North Devon?
It did. I mean, my normal day-to-day job is I work for the NHS, so I was part of the task force that sort of recruited and sort of got many volunteers will give up their time in the vaccination centres, so sort of fast-tracking the recruitment and vetting everybody and that sort of thing. For we had big leisure centre in middle of Barnstable, and we had queues, and we had a really good response from the community. I think everything all over Devon and all over the country, really, everybody came together with one aim in mind, and that was to get rid of COVID.
Yeah, I agree. And those volunteers were fantastic, weren't they? The volunteers who kept the queues happy, who kept the car parks turning over. Yeah. Brilliant. Maybe it feels a little bit as if some of that community spirit, we could do with getting some of that back. We don't want a pandemic back. Yeah. But we could do with getting some of that spirit back again, couldn't we?
I mean, we see it in industry and other sectors now around the issue of people working from home now.
Yeah,
you know, before the pandemic, even in the NHS, you know, colleagues are working from home. You know, if it's not part of the week, it's all of the week, because it's changed how people work. You know, it was always deemed before COVID. You know, that this is my desk, I come into work, and that's my domain. Now it's like hot desking when you have to come into work and you go home and, you know, you sit at home. And I hope that any of your listeners who are working from home are applying to get their tax cut your tax relief on the
working
from home.
Yeah,
because you can do that.
So do you think do you think working from home works, or a hybrid arrangement works? Does it depend really on what the job is?
I mean, it depends on the job, because there are some jobs, particularly in the NHS, that you have to be there because patients come to you.
Yeah.
But there's some administration roles or project works that you can do at home, and that's in any industry. You know, there's not so much emphasis put in on that you must actually come and travel to work now, which is also best for also good for the climate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's true. This is Devoncast from Radio X. Thank you for tuning in. We're available on the Radio X website, from your usual podcast provider, and from the all-new Devoncast Radio. The guest that you're hearing in with Ali and I today, or Ali and me today, is Ian Room, leader of North Devon District Council. Before we descend into the maelstrom of local football, Ali, let's
I can't wait.
Let's talk housing.
Yep, let's talk housing. So housing is high on the agenda in Devon, as always. And this week I caught up with Chair of the Devon Housing Task Force, Councillor Mandy Ewings. The task force was set up in 2022 in response to the housing crisis and is made up of members of the 11 local authorities in Devon. With around 11,000 second homes in Devon, a rising number of long-term empty homes, not enough affordable housing being built, or homes to rent, more and more people are finding themselves in temporary accommodation, and that's proving costly for councils and not sustainable. This summer, the Devon Housing Commission, a group of experts, academics, parliamentarians and councillors, brought together by the task force, will present its findings on the county housing crisis, and this is expected to be the trigger for improvements. The Commission has already lobbied the government for measures to control the growth of short-term holiday lets. Councillor Ewings, who is also leader of West Devon Borough Council, tells us about some of the problems and possible solutions for Devon.
We want to know really the ins and outs of the difficulties of providing housing within the whole of Devon, and by that including Plymouth and Torbay. We need to understand the other representations that we can make to government to maximise housing resources to the area. Because as we all know, Devon has some huge pockets of deprivation within housing, particularly up in North Devon. There's pockets in other individual areas, but North Devon seems to be predominantly really in an area of deprivation. We want to be able to create houses and homes for people who live here. It's about affordable housing, but also building the right houses in the right places for the benefit of the local residents so that they can afford it. We want to look at community land trusts and all the other different ways that we can accelerate. We're looking at exception sites, that somebody will come along and say, you can have the front of my field and I will let you build however many houses, but I would like one or two market houses to make up for what I would lose. And it's being prepared to being more adaptable within the housing market.
So there's many different aspects to this. What do you think is the main priority at the moment? What can you actually get done?
I think for us it is looking into the reasons why things can't be done, to turn it on its head. It's looking at how we can move forward and what are the obstacles in our way. One of the greatest things that's coming out, not just in Devon, but in the whole of the country really, is flooding. Why are all these areas flooding? Well, they're flooding because houses are just being built on top of land. There is no sustainable drainage. There's no runoff. There's nothing thought about. So at the moment, we're really going into digging deep with South West Water as to what their plans are, where they intend to invest their infrastructure, what infrastructure do they have in place, and holding South West Water to account at the moment.
That was Councillor Mandy Ewings explaining how South West Water has a part to play in improving housing for local people. West Devon Council and many others are supporting plans to double the council tax on second homes from next April. The extra money raised is expected to be ring-fenced to address housing needs in local areas. Councillor Ewings says second homes and landlords issuing no-fault eviction notices are two of the issues which are preventing communities from thriving. Here she is again.
If you're going to get your Citibank bonus, please don't just come and spend it here on a property. we're communities. We need to be able to live as communities. And at the moment, it is just so, so difficult for families to be able to find a home that can be theirs under all the Section 21 notices that have still not been properly ironed out. And the government are talking of, there's even talk it may be dropped by government as the paper stands as it is. And that does not give confidence to families who want to stay somewhere, who want their children to go to school in the village school. They want their lives to be able to be in one small spot as opposed to having to pick up their bags every 6 months and move somewhere else. When you look at Salcombe, Salcombe has 1 in 5 properties are second homes. How is that supposed to work? You have developers who say that they will build in Salcombe, they will build their wonderful £1 million+ houses, etc. But can we deliver the affordable elsewhere, and we'll give you the money to do that, and we'll give you extra money so you can build them elsewhere, but we don't want to build them in Salcombe? That is not morally right. Mm. You know, that is creating an artificial community. And you can't even call it a community, really. It's an artificial place that, you know, has all the yachts bobbing in the sea and all the rest of it. But actually, there's no local people on the ground to keep that town alive when it needs to be kept alive. Even West Devon, it's 1 in 12 properties are second homes. Mm. So it does affect us all in some way, shape or form.
So do you think you can go further with that? Because if the money isn't really an issue, how are you going to put policies in place to try and encourage these homes to be used all year round?
Well, we could always join the St Ives policy of you can't have second homes, and the homes can only be bought or rented by people who have got a very strong connection to St Ives.
That was Councillor Mandy Ewings talking about how some radical changes may be needed to sort out Devon's housing problems. The St Ives policy refers to new homes, not existing properties. So if you have a quaint cottage by the sea, it can still be a second home. And as we know, those are often the properties that people want for their holiday homes, not the new homes. For this reason, there are some people in St Ives who do not think the policy goes far enough. Ian, is this an option for Devon, do you think, banning second homes?
Well, the main thing is there's not enough homes for local people. We know that because we've got a huge housing waiting list across all of Devon. But let's not forget that we rely heavily on tourism, and there has to be a concerted balance. There were second homes there before there was a crisis. But the way that the tax system works or used to work, if the bill goes ahead, is very much in favour of the rich landlord who can afford second homes and keep their job in London or where else and come down for their lovely holidays. And I'm not begrudging people that, but it's got to have a certain balance because we rely on that income coming in for our economy. Housing is a major problem. I mean, I've met with the Environment Agency a couple of weeks ago to discuss about areas, not only about releasing brownfield land sites, but also looking at the flood risk that Mandy mentioned there. And I agree totally with the issues that Mandy said. And, you know, Lord Best, who is in charge of the commission, has been up to North Devon. In fact, the commission came and visited North Devon. And the thing is, it's around, you know, I walk down Barnstable High Street, for example, and there's all these properties above the shops that we could convert into flats. But because of the objections from the Environment Agency with how things currently stand with the flood risk element of it and meeting the policy set down by government, really, is exactly what the question I posed was: how can we make this happen? What can we come up with to allow the Environment Agency to say, yes, let's allow planning permission from these landlords of these properties to turn them into apartments? Then the town centres across Devon, if you were to utilise that, would also be self-policing, because you've got residents there who can oversee things. and report things, but also it would take a huge strain off some of the emergency accommodation that we're having to provide at the moment. And they've gone away, and we're focusing now on whether we can come up with a specific plan around this area is okay, for example, for if there was a flood to happen, it would give someone 2 weeks' notice. We could give them a week's notice. There's certain procedures within the EA that we can use and start getting some of these properties back into or to be a change of use so that it can be accommodation for people.
Mm. One of the things we come across quite often in council meetings is when a developer comes forward with a plan for X number of houses, and the council has a policy that says, well, 30% of them or whatever percent have to be affordable. And then the developer goes away, comes back a couple of months later saying they've done a viability study and they now can't provide the affordable houses. Councils find themselves in a bit of a cleft stick there, don't they? Does the legislation need to be tightened up so that developers have to provide?
I think that yes, I think it does need to be tightened up, and also I think more and more we need to get some experts out there, and we've used one in the past, and challenging those viability issues. For example, a lot of councils, and we're one council that refuse planning permission for a certain development. And the developer takes us to the planning inspectorate, who then goes in the developer's favour and leaves us and the community as taxpayers to pay the cost for that. So we've got to really follow the law, and it's coming down from the National Planning Framework from central government, and we do need strong planning regulations that will help us within the viability issue, because you are quite correct in what you're saying, that developers will use the viability issue for not doing the development of their homes.
And also the business of the five-year land supply, which is, for people who aren't familiar with it, councils have to prove that they have enough land to build a certain number of houses on for the next 5 years, and none of them do, or none of them does. Do you think that's been used as a stick to beat councils with as well?
I think it has. And so in North Devon, we had a development in North Devon that we had the planning inspector recently, just later last year, who came and assessed whether our five-year land supply, because our local plan takes in Torridge as well, so it's North Devon and Torridge, and they've voted, they didn't vote, they came to the conclusion that North Devon does have a five-year land supply. If that decision by the inspector went the other way, then it would open the floodgates to more developers coming saying we want to develop here, and because you haven't got a five-year land supply.
Mm. What about exception sites then? These areas of land outside development boundaries, the statistics say that North Devon, only 2% of North Devon is built on an average area, that's the 6% of land is built on. Mm. So there is scope there to build in North Devon. It's a vast area. There's lots of empty land at the moment. Do you think that is a possibility? Are you going to be appealing for landowners to come forward?
So there is land, but lots of that land is in flood risk areas.
Right.
They're in North Devon is made up by an area of outstanding natural beauty. We've got the biosphere, and there's lots of areas that we can't build on. I mean, we're on the tip. Mm. We check in parts of Exmoor, just a little bit of Exmoor National Park, which has its own planning authority and its own rules. But I think we have to look at this strategically, and we are just doing a new local plan, which we have to abide by. So we'll be assessing each of these criteria of where we need industrial units so that work can be... areas of work can be created for people who are going to live in these new homes.
Mm. It's a balancing act as well, isn't it? Protecting the environment.
It is. And all the while, we've got to take into consideration what the law says. and the and planning is a very complicated, convoluted area. And obviously the elections are coming up, and we all know that Labour are saying that they're going to have introduce new planning regulations, which, you know, if you can build there, then let's build. So it's going to be an interesting time.
You're listening to the Devoncast, or to Devoncast from Radio X, available on the Radio X website, from your usual podcast providers, and from the all-new Devoncast Radio, for which you just have to ask the smart speaker in the corner of your room to play Devoncast Radio. I'm going to go to a subject close to my heart now. There is a local government link, though, because Torquay United remain in a state of some limbo at the moment. Their ground is owned by Torbay Council. The stumbling block for the previous owners was the fact that he very much wanted to move them to a new stadium and build houses on the old one, and the council was very much saying, that's never going to happen, Plainmoor is not for sale. And after 6 years, he's walked away. So Torquay are up for sale. Are you a football supporter, Ian?
Well, I'm from Sheffield. So, yeah. I mean, I came to Devon 35 years ago in the Royal Air Force.
And, okay.
So I am a Sheffield United supporter.
Sheffield United man.
Yeah. But coming down to the southwest, I've got really into Exeter Chiefs rugby.
Yeah.
And I obviously Bearham, which is Barnstable. I go down to the matches occasionally to watch the rugby. But the football, yes, it's very interesting to watch what happens in Torquay. I mean, I've listened to the reports and stuff, and obviously your previous podcasts, which have really good and highlighted the situation.
You can come again.
Yeah. But it's really the, it's the supporters, isn't it? And it's a great community atmosphere. And football, like rugby, like cricket, brings communities together. And it's a place to sort of like release all the stresses we in the community and have a good time with your mates.
It is. And one of the things that we've been talking about in the podcast this afternoon is money trickling down from above to the communities where it's needed. And that's just not happening in football.
Mm.
The upper echelons of the game are awash with cash. But lower levels, we're talking Torquay, we're talking Exeter, Plymouth even. A great side up in North Devon. You know, everybody looks up to Biddeford as an example of how a non-league side can be done. But as we speak, a decision is imminent on the future of Torquay, who the new owners are going to be. There's a consortium which involves the Torquay United Supporters Trust, the chairman of which is a chap called Nick Broderick. I grabbed a chance to chat with him the other day. The other voice you hear in this is that of the Herald Express sports editor, Richard Hughes, with whom I record the Yellow Army podcast, which you can also hear on Devoncast. But why I'm saying that is because we recorded this while we were sitting in a car outside Plainmoor in a hailstorm, hence the very loud, very loud background noise. Here's our interview with Nick.
We've been approached by a number of prospective investors or bidders into the football club, but Michael Westcott, being one of them, was clearly the standout person, the one who has the vision for how he can see Torquay United progressing into the future, and importantly, that there is a Torquay United that's going to go into the future. So we've been in discussions with him for the best part of the last 3 weeks, and in that time he's been trying to find others who would join him and invest in the project. And over that period of time he's found another four people. In total there are five investors. Four of them are local businessmen. One is a long-standing Torquay United fan who lives in America, and Tuft have been offered the opportunity to be part of this, and initially it's going to be a 50-50 split.
So it'll be part fan-owned and part business consortium, and the statement says that by the start of next season you envisage that fans will own half the club. This is a very exciting development, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're really excited by it. I mean, I know Tuft has said in the past that we have no desire to take over and run the football club, but this is, well, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to return the club to being a proper, fully community, fan-owned football club.
So that was Nick Broderick from the Torquay United Supporters Trust talking to Richard Hughes and me. That interview was first broadcast on the Torquay United Yellow Army podcast, which is available along with this podcast, Two Locks and a Cox, which is the Exeter Chiefs podcast, which I recommend if anybody hasn't heard that one yet. It's very good. Also does quite a bit on local rugby, national rugby as well. There are other podcasts on there. Just ask the box in your corner for Devoncast Radio. That's all for now, folks. Ian, thank you very much for coming in and joining us today. Ian Room, the leader of North Devon District Council, has been our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you along. We've just done a very light brush on some really important topics that I think will come back again and again on this: housing, levelling up, all that kind of thing. We may be calling you in again, Ian, if that's okay.
Pleasure.
Ali, thank you very much. It's been a
pleasure.
Indeed. You can find us, as we say, on the Radio X website or wherever you usually find your podcasts. And if you do that, be sure to subscribe so that you can listen to the next Devoncast the minute it drops. And you can contact us if you want to complain away, suggest things that we should be talking about. You can do that by email, news@radiox.co.uk. That's Radio EXE, not just Radio X, it's Radio EXE. This has been Devoncast. I've been Guy Henderson.
I've been Ali Stevenson.
And this has been Ian Room in the corner of the studio. Thanks for listening on your commute, on your dog walk, or wherever it's been. We'll be back very soon.
Catch the latest episode of Devoncast every Friday at radiox.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts.